You wanted the best and you got it. The hottest band in the land, KISS!
Hello, friends. It's Patrick here. If you have made it to Thursday of KISS Week, then I think you know what's going on. I'm here. Jim is not here. This originally was going to be Jim's vacation week, and I was trying to honor that. And I was also using it as an excuse to talk about KISS, which I wanted to do for a very long time. And as you've heard, I've had a couple friends and listeners join us. And again, that is the case for today, day four of KISS Week. A very nice thing happened in the Life of Suburbs pod. We met an amazing man who lives in central New York called Mike Coley, and he is here today. We're just so thrilled that he's our friend and part of our community. And Mike, welcome to the show. Listeners are going to be very familiar with your voice. And how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I'm just thrilled to be a part of this community, to be honest with you.
You know, that means so much. I remember early on, Mike, when you and I first started doing some podcasting together, you began one thing by saying, "I'm a KISS fan." So I always filed that in the back of my mind. And today, basically what we're doing this week, if you've been listening, if you're just coming in today, go back and listen to the first three episodes. But we've done this a couple of times on Suburbs Pod, and that is to kind of pick out five albums from a classic, iconic group and talk about them. And that's what we're doing with KISS. And we are on album number four. So we've previously discussed Alive, Destroyer, and Love Gun. And today we're going to talk about Rock and Roll Over. I'm gonna give a couple of quick facts here, and then we'll talk to Mike and jump into the album. The album was released on November 1st, 1976. And keep in mind, folks, Destroyer was released in March of the same year. So that is not much time. It was their fifth studio album, sixth overall. It was recorded in 2 weeks in 1976, between the end of September and mid to late October. The record reached number 11 on the Billboard charts. That was KISS's third top 20 album in a row. There were a couple of singles from the record that we'll get to. It was produced by Eddie Kramer, who engineered and sort of fixed up Alive, and also produced the album that will follow this, Love Gun, which we talked about yesterday. Now, having set the stage, we're going to talk about Rock and Roll Over. Before we get there, how did you get into KISS for the first time?
Well, the neighborhood I grew up in had a ton of kids.
Right.
So there were people my age, a little bit younger. A throwback to a previous episode I was in. My buddy up the street whose house we listened to the Venom album where the crucifix fell off the wall.
We'll get people that listener episode number, because it's probably my favorite story of all time on this podcast.
So, yeah. So his name is Rob Barone, and he and I, we were basically just like from the start, we were tight. And a buddy of mine across the street, same guy, you know, same crew, Bob Flanders, and we were all KISS fans from early on. 8, 9 years old, we were involved with KISS because, I think mainly because we referred to them as the teenagers, quote unquote, because there were some older kids in our neighborhood who kind of took us under their wing. And they were like our coaches for, you know, we formed a neighborhood football team and they ran us into the ground. You know, we had helmets, we had logos on our helmets and everything,
really?
But we never played a game. We had double sessions every day during the summer, and we were ready to play a game, and we never played a game. But
other neighborhoods were so organized.
Yes. Yeah, but, you know, and we played wiffle ball together and baseball together. And so the teenagers were kind of the people we looked up to, the teenagers, quote unquote. And so... So they introduced us to so many things, cool and probably to our parents not so cool. But that's kind of where we became exposed to bands like Kiss. I'm still baffled that I got into music at like 8, 9 years old. But Kiss did that for me. And they were the introduction to rock and roll, to theatrical music, to, you know, they were lumped into the heavy metal genre, but they weren't really heavy metal. They just kind of looked metal, but they were just a rock and roll band. And they had the thing. They had that thing that just grabbed people my age. Yeah. So Kiss Alive 2, I think, was the album that really exposed me to them.
Okay. So let's dig into Rock and Roll Over. So you and I have both been listening to this album a bunch, you know, the past couple days as we got ready for this, because on Suburbs Pod, we prepare thoroughly at all times. And, you know, it's interesting to me, when you look at it, I mean, and read and sort of like, you know, look at music history, the way it's been framed, it's like, well, this was a reaction to Destroyer. Like, you know, Bob Ezrin came in on Destroyer. He forced all these outside writers and strings and made them do it 100 times to get it just right. And, you know, pissed Ace and Peter Criss-Off and all that. And they made this masterpiece album with, you know, incredible songs and cool sounds that still holds up today. And then when Rock and Roll Over Time came, it was like, number one, we probably don't have time to do that again. And number two, that kind of sucked. It was such hard work. And let's get in there, get back to basics, cut some songs. It has that feel to it. It does. But it doesn't quite go back to the early, you know, the first three albums, the originals. It's got some acoustic guitar. Like the first thing you hear is acoustic guitar when you drop the, you know, when you start the record. And what are your overall impressions of the record, Mike, in the Kiss catalog?
Right along the same lines as what you just said. You know, Destroyer was a very produced album. And with this one, and just the fact that they went right back into the studio after Destroyer, which is crazy, because Destroyer was kind of their studio album that kind of put them on the map. Where, you know, they were, you know, Detroit Rock City. I loved the production in Detroit Rock City. You know, the whole, you know, driving the car with, you know, radio.
That blew my mind.
It was amazing. And then, you know, back when I was a kid, I think this was the first album I ever bought by Kiss. It was just a back to basics, simple production, rock and roll album. That had some really cool stuff on it.
Yep.
And you know, they did have some hits from it. Not as big a hits as some of the other albums.
Right.
The album itself as a whole, it stands up really well as a great rock and roll album.
Well said, Mike. Very well said. And it, you know, I think because of what happened with Destroyer, certainly there were going to be people who bought this record because It was the next Kiss album, right? And they were Kiss fans now because of whether it was from Beth or Rock and Roll All Night or, you know, the Paul Lynde Halloween special or, you know, like whatever it was. They were going to buy this record, right? They were Kiss fans. And what they got, if they listened closely, is just what you said, a solid rock and roll album that I think some of the echoes, you know, the more I've been studying Kiss and learning, some of the echoes that they talk about, one being Mott the Hoople, you know, it kind of cuts close to that too. It's not as raw and as loud as their live show, but it's, you know, but it's got just such a cool charm to it. It's a record that like definitely captures a band that was working hard, and the stuff they were doing was working, and everything, you know, they were doing was sounding really good. I mean, they are in peak form on this album. And one thing that's interesting to me, and I hope you can provide some context on this, being a New Yorker yourself, Mike, but what I've got here is it was recorded at the Star Theater in Nanuet outside of New York City. So they went into a theater, you know, kind of like a local town old movie hall or whatever that's been converted into a theater. Maybe it was a theater for stage plays. I don't know. And they set everything up in there. And so they got a different sound.
Those first three albums had great songs on them. Great songs on them. But the way they were produced, they just didn't grab people. Recording in some of these old movie houses, and there's so many of them in New York. There's so many of these old
movie
houses.
Are they really? That's so interesting.
There's a ton of them. And they're all over the place, and they're still all active. And I don't know if all of them are active, but I'm not familiar with the one that this one was recorded at. But, I mean, upstate here, I mean, there's like three of them right in a row, and from Syracuse, Rome, Utica, that are, you know, 1920s era movie houses that are just flat out gorgeous, gorgeous theaters that sound awesome whenever whoever you're seeing there. I mean, they could go with minimal PAs in these theaters and still sound amazing.
Right.
And that's what this area has been known for, is a lot of these old movie house theaters that have become concert halls that are just phenomenal.
And interestingly enough, they took advantage of this. So got to give Eddie Kramer credit. And also, I want to say to his engineer, I want to mention this guy's name because he did some amazing stuff. Quirky Stasiak, and he was an engineer that worked with Kramer. But one thing Kramer did was that he put Peter Criss in an upstairs bathroom because he loved the echo and it made the drum sound bigger and, you know, made Peter Criss's style have some natural reverb. Let's think about the cowbell on this album. Peter Criss plays really well on this album, but the cowbell features prominently on several songs. Way better cowbell than Blue Oyster Cult ever did, man. I mean, the cowbell in this album is outstanding. Am I right?
Well, I mean, Blue Oyster Cult is famous for one song with the cowbell.
Yes, so. But on this album, there are at least three tracks featuring the cowbell, which are great.
But yeah, I really paid attention to Peter Criss on this album. Yeah, and like the two songs that he sings on this album, phenomenal.
So he sings on Baby Driver.
Baby Driver is the one song that I really overlooked in my younger years that I just latched onto recently. And that song has got like a fog hat, Thin Lizzy feel to it. It's got that smoky voice, and it's just a great rock song. If you're looking for a really cool song that you've never heard by Kiss, I recommend Baby Driver from Rock and Roll Over. That song is so cool.
Well, I'll tell you a couple things about this album for me back in the early days. Number one, it had my favorite Kiss cover of all time. And two, it came with a sticker of that Kiss cover when I got my copy. And also, number three, it was a Kiss album I didn't have, so I had to have it. And I'm sure I begged my mom to buy it for me, and it's so rich, and it's got all the sort of nuances of Destroyer and some of the hard rock of Love Gun, and, you know, a few dashes of the early days. And I will say that Hard Luck Woman was the first single off the album. It actually was a top 20 hit. Mike, it reached number 15.
If never I met you, I never have seen you cry. If not for a first hello, we never have to say goodbye. If never I held you, my feelings would never show. It's time I start walking, but there's so much you'll never know. I keep telling you, hard luck.
Another one where there are some acoustic guitar textures, right, that weren't necessarily used like in the Destroyer sense of, you know, ballads and being serious and all that. It's more the sense of the Faces or some early British rock, right, where you could strum those acoustic guitars really hard and still make them sound good. That's what I love about a lot of tracks on Rock and Roll Over. And since we've come to this point, Mike, we might as well talk about the second single from the record, Calling Dr. Love.
Oh, yeah.
Was released as the second single. And this is amazing to me. It actually made the top 20 also, number 16, one place below Hard Luck Woman on the charts. I don't know. What do you think, man? I mean, the cowbell's great. It's a super fun song. It's been reused in some movies, and
that's why I've been drawn to this album for years. The cover itself, which you just mentioned, the cover is, but Calling Dr. Love was, you know, when we were playing, pretending we were Kiss in the garage, I was on the tennis racket, another buddy was on the wiffle ball bat as the bass. Calling Dr. Love was one of those songs.
Oh, without a doubt.
For better or for worse, I mean, they inspired an entire generation of music. You know, along with Aerosmith and Thin Lizzy.
Yep.
They also inspired, for better or for worse, the 80s hair metal scene.
Yep.
That entire scene, I think, was very influenced by Kiss, by Aerosmith, and Van Halen, where it was, you know, a show. It mm-hmm. wasn't just playing the music. It was a show. Mm-hmm. So, especially with Kiss, because they had all the pyrotechnics, and they had the makeup and the costumes, and you know, and it wasn't just the hair metal scene. It was also, you know, when you get into like the death metal scene with like Mayhem and Destruction and all these thrash metal bands who started wearing makeup. That corpse makeup basically came from Kiss.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think when you look at Rock and Roll Over, it's a great Kiss album. And it's also Kiss being Kiss, right? It's Kiss at their most workmanlike. I mean, you've got Hard Luck Woman. You've got Calling Dr. Love. What are other tracks? And we talked about Baby Driver a little bit. What are some other tracks on this, Mike, that stick out to you? I mean, I think I Want You is a pretty interesting song.
Yeah, I Want You is... I liken that to Black Diamond. I really do. Just the way it's put together. And that's my favorite song on this album.
Is it really? Oh, yeah. Cool.
And it's a great way to kick off the album because it kind of gives a perspective of where they are at that point in their career. Making Love is another one.
I just hate what the girl says. Wait. I really want her by my side. Don't hesitate. I really want her by my side. The whole night through, we do all the things that we want.
The funny thing about Kiss, you know, being a, you know, a 9, 10, 11-year-old kid getting right into them, is some of their lyrics are just, like, totally inappropriate for a 9, 10, 11-year-old kid to be listening to.
Absolutely.
You know, back then, as a young kid, you don't understand. But as an adult, you're like, oh, geez. I like that as a kid. Yeah. And no wonder my parents didn't want me to listen to that.
And this record too, it's actually interesting, Mike. It's totally dominated by Gene and Paul. There's one Peter Criss song, which is Baby Driver, we just talked about. There's no Ace Frehley compositions, right?
Nope.
You know, he's kind of not really here. I mean, he plays some good solos. I love the way the guitar is recorded on this record. But again, there are those Paul Stanley acoustic guitars, there's some blending stuff. And one thing I wanted to, you know, bring up to everybody, I think I've mentioned this, or we have mentioned this kind of in passing during Kiss Week, but Gene and Paul Stanley were such hard workers, man. They would go into studios when they're on the road and cut a demo. They would, when they were home in New York or they were staying in LA for a while, they'd go into studios and cut demos. They were always trying to come up with material. Back in those days, in the mid-70s, a big thing was albums being returned from record dealers, right? One of Casablanca's philosophies was, if we keep Kiss making records, you know, every time a dealer wants to send us back, you know, X amount of copies of Destroyer or Live or the first or, you know, second album, we can say, hey, there's a new album coming out in 3 months. It's going to be a big hit. Keep this in stock. People don't want to buy the old stuff, right? And so they wouldn't send it back. But, I mean, Rock and Roll Over was made really quickly. And in doing that, what a great job they did. I mean, there are songs like See You in My Dreams, for example, or Ladies Room was kind of lame. Man, to put together 10 songs like this and put this package together really was a great achievement.
And despite the fact that there's no Ace written songs on this album, his solo in Calling Dr. Love is probably one of his best solos.
Yeah.
Kiss was the foundation for me. I'm into a whole bunch of different music at this point in my life. But Kiss laid the foundation for me seeking out rock and roll chord, you know, just power chords and solos. And so that's where, you know, where when I'm looking for something to listen to, it's always something that's a little bit on the heavy side. And that's, I really think that's because of Kiss.
Yep. And I'll agree with you, man. I'll echo that sentiment. Man, that's a really good way to wrap this up. Because, well said. I mean, it really is. And just talk a little bit about your musical activities. Put in a little plug for you. Up there in Central New York. And also let people know how they can get in touch with you if they're intrigued by some of the stuff you're working on.
Yeah, so I run a website called 315music.com, which is basically a website that focuses on music in the Central New York area. Our big focus is on the local musicians in our area, which there's a plethora of, and they're all over the musical mat as far as genres go. And so if you're looking, if you're, and we also cover, you know, if there's a live show in our area, we also cover that, even if they're not like a 315 okay. Central New York band. Yeah. So, you know, any shows that happen in Syracuse or Utica or Auburn or Ithaca or Watertown or any of the spots that attract concerts in Central New York, we cover that. Obviously, that's not really happening a whole lot these days, but that we do that. And if you're a Central New York area band that has something that's, you know, that you're releasing, send us your stuff and we'll get it out there for you and we'll get some plugs for you. And if you're looking to get in touch with me, I am on Facebook at Mike Kohli, MikeKohli. Most of the stuff I publish is public. And I'm working with the Disruption Network, a local podcast platform, to put together something of a local podcast,
yes.
Local music podcast.
It's been an amazing conversation. Rock and roll over, folks. It was the immediate response to Destroyer, November of 76. It's a classic Kiss album. It's definitely in my top five. And I'm so glad Mike was here to talk about it with me on Suburbs Pod. I'm Patrick Foster, and with me has been
Mike Kohli.
Thank you very much, brother. We will talk to you guys tomorrow for the final day of Kiss Week.
Thanks, Patrick.
Number 25, moving up 8 notches this week, second week on the chart. This is Kiss and Hard Luck Woman.